everybody. It's Mike Jeffers, ChicagoJazz.com, and this is Talkin' Jazz, episode 108. I am here with saxophonist Roy McGrath. He's going to be performing August 31st at the Chicago Jazz Festival from 1:30 to 2:30, but it could be 1 to 2, so yeah. Get there at 1 o'clock.
Yep.
It's at the Heritage Pavilion, Jazz and Heritage Pavilion, right there in Millennium Park. Awesome campus, by the way. And if you want more information, we have everything at ChicagoJazz.com, including a map, which always helps.
Nice.
I digress. Yeah. Anyways, Roy, it's awesome to have you here.
Of course.
And welcome to the Johnny O's Hot Dog Stand,
awesome.
The Jazz and Hot Dog Stand interview. I'm sure you have never talked Jazz and Hot Dog Stand before.
Never. Nope.
And you probably will never want to again.
we'll find out after this interview.
Don't worry, it's not really hard hitting. Don't worry. All right, so you're playing there August 31st, 1 p.m. to 2 p.m. ish, and you're going to be playing music from your new recording, Remembrances, and it's with your sextet.
Yep.
So why don't we talk a little bit about Remembrances? Now,
okay.
Remembrances came out of another work that we talked about a little bit off air. But why don't we talk a little bit about that and how it turned into Remembrances, because this is a recording that is getting a lot of play right now. It's getting a lot of critical acclaim, and to be able to see him perform this whole thing live at the Chicago Jazz Fest August 31st is going to be incredible. So how did this whole thing come about?
Well, there's a cultural center in Hermosa, the Hermosa district, called the Segundo Ruiz Belvis Cultural Center. It's a Puerto Rican cultural center. And they got commissioned by the 606 to bring entertainment to the opening of the Julia de Burgos Park in the 606. It's one of the parks that has like a playground and a bunch of stuff for kids and stuff.
Okay.
So when they opened it up on El Día de la Palabra, which is the day of word, or the day of all art that came from word, right?
Okay.
So Julia de Burgos was a famous Puerto Rican poet that led a very interesting life and died a very tragic death. Her poetry was some of the first Latin American poetry to talk about Latin American rights in America and female rights in America and South America.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So they commissioned me to like write a series of pieces that would kind of showcase Chicago, Afro, Puerto Rican jazz, and her poetry, right? So for that day, we put that music together, and I only got like 2 or 3 weeks to put it together. So
no pressure, right?
Exactly. Yeah. So way too much pressure. And after that, I had these templates to build upon, right?
Okay, yeah.
So over the course of playing with my band for about 2 years, we kind of changed the music around for a jazz quartet format, and then we added Puerto Rican percussion to it to open it up to a sextet.
Now, you're from Puerto Rico originally.
Yep.
How did you, I mean, before we get into you coming over, just as far as talking about this work, were you already connected with that center and everything? Is that how they knew about you, or were you playing gigs there? I mean, that, it seems like for them to reach out to you, it's an obvious choice, but I'm just curious how the whole thing came about with
that. Actually, the center's artistic director, Omar Torres, has a funny story about it. It's so there's a famous Puerto Rican singer-songwriter named Rafael Hernandez, who wrote some of the hugest hits in the history of like our music and Mexico's music, because he was exiled to Mexico for a while. His son came to town to play with a band that center put together. And at that time, I was actually studying his music and learning some of his boleros and his songs, you know. So I said, wow, this guy's in town. I got to go check him out. I got to meet him and stuff. So I contacted the center. I actually got on the gig because I talked to the band director and a saxophonist like double booked himself, you know. So I got on the gig too. Met the guy. We started a relationship. Then he started hiring me to put events together. Then I became a Afro-Caribbean jazz instructor at the center through After School Matters for about 2, maybe 3 years.
Oh, that's unbelievable.
Yeah. So we developed a relationship over time, but that's how it started.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, that's unbelievable.
Yeah,
so now this recording, Remembrances, came out, and it's based off of that whole process, and then you expanded on it.
Yeah.
But now at the Jazz Fest, you're going to be playing the whole thing down. Now, you told me you've got, like, it's the whole band,
right? It's the whole band, yeah.
So what is the difference? So you, like you said, Puerto Rican percussion is playing Puerto. Is there a difference between? I know there is.
Oh, of course,
I want you to talk about it because you know what it is.
Yeah.
Between Cuban and between Afro-Cuban and all that stuff. I mean, what's the difference with the Puerto Ricans?
Oh, of course. Well, Puerto Rico has two main styles of folkloric percussion music: bomba and plena. Okay. Right. They both use very different instruments. Bomba uses these big wooden barrels that are played in that are played like sitting down.
Okay.
And plena uses these
mallets or something.
No, no, with your hands.
With your hands. And they're wooden.
And they're wooden. And they're very big barrels. And they're all these like just like Afro Cuban music and African music. There are all these calls and responses and rhythmic. Language that they all talk, the drums talk to each other with.
Is there a clave? There's a clave happening through there? No.
So bomba actually doesn't have clave.
Okay.
Yeah. I think. I'm not a percussionist, so I might get some flack for that. And that's okay, because I'll learn something.
Right, that's right. Leave it in the comments.
Yeah. Piggybacking on what I just said, like, part of my involvement in this center is that I learned a lot of my own musical culture through this center, because I left Puerto Rico before I became a full-fledged musician.
Okay.
You know, so that's why, that's part of the reason this album is out. You know?
Yeah.
So, and then the other style of music is plena music, which is, imagine the same barrel or a smaller, like a conga, and you cut the top off, and you have a handheld instrument like a Brazilian pandeiro.
Okay.
Right? And those are the two styles, so I kind of based this album off of that. Plus, there are a couple like modern jazz tunes thrown in as well. Yeah.
That's amazing. Yeah. Well, first of all, okay, so you're going to be performing all of this August 31st at the Jazz and Heritage Stage right there in Millennium Park, part of the Chicago Jazz Festival.
Yep.
So how do you get from Puerto Rico over to the States and having some interest in what's going on as far as music goes?
Let's see.
Were you interested in jazz when you were in Puerto Rico?
Oh, for sure. Yeah. So, I mean, I was in high school when I first started, so I had about a year and a half to 2 years on my instrument before I went to the United States. And the first place I went to was New Orleans. I got my bachelor's at Loyola University in New Orleans. So I mean, I picked up the saxophone, and like I had no idea, like, what music does the saxophone play? That was my first question. You know?
Really?
We're like, What music does this instrument play?
What am I supposed to do with this?
Yeah, like, you know, you see it in movies, and, like, there's a cliche around the saxophone. Right. But that's not what you see people play. So what do people play, you know? So I went to Borders.
That's actually an honest question, right? I mean,
I don't know.
I never thought of actually asking that question.
Yeah.
But that's the obvious question.
Yeah. So I went to Borders at the mall in Puerto Rico, and I had, like, $15 in my pocket, and the jazz section had like a little clearance aisle, and
you could get two for 15.
Two for ten.
Oh man!
Yeah. So my two $4.99 albums were Blue Train and Kind of Blue, and I got Blue Train, John Coltrane's Blue Train, first because on the picture there's a man holding a saxophone. You know,
that's awesome.
Simple, you know, and then
it's simple marketing, man.
Marketing, like if you think about it, like you know. Blue Note did it right, you know?
Right.
Yeah.
I don't even think they thought about that, but worked.
It worked, yeah. And then, like, I flipped Kind of Blue around, and I saw John Coltrane's name on it, so I was like, okay.
I'm in.
Yeah.
Oh, that's amazing.
Yeah.
So that's your first jazz recording was...
Those two, yeah, and that's how it happened. And then, like, okay, so I was like, okay, this is the music, I dig it, and, you know, improvising is fun, so I went down the jazz track.
Were you just learning by ear? Were you taking lessons? What do you?
I took lessons at the conservatory by from a saxophonist by the name of Norberto Tico Ortiz, who's a great friend of mine and oh my gosh, amazing player. And then between that and I actually started gigging about 2 years into it. We had a high school jazz quartet playing a gig in Puerto Rico at this one bar for like $30. And dude, we were playing Naima. We had no idea.
Really?
Yeah, but we didn't know the
fake books or
Fake books, total fake books, you know. And we didn't know the chords tonight, my man. So I don't even know what that sounded like, but we were doing it, you know. Yeah, we were trying hard, you know. That's what we were doing. Yeah. So we like jazz, and we just went through it, you know.
Is jazz in Puerto Rico? I mean, is that something that people are interested in? I mean, or is there other music, and then they're like, okay, well, these kids are playing jazz, yeah, and it's nice, but you know, whatever.
Well, maybe 15 years ago when I started, it was different now for sure, because you know, with Miguel Zenon being a Guggenheim and MacArthur fellow, and David Sanchez and all the others before them, like the Puerto Rican jazz musician has been like lifted up.
Right.
You know?
Right.
But like when I started, yeah, for sure. Like jazz is a thing in Puerto Rico. People love it. People play it. It's studied in school, you know? So yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's amazing. So then you came over to the States.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. And were you studying jazz when you went to New Orleans?
Yeah.
I mean, that was it. That was the reason why you went
there. Exactly. That's the reason why I went there.
But you went to Berkeley or something, did a summer thing
sometime. Yeah. I did a 5-week summer program, because Berkeley gives a lot of scholarships in Puerto Rico every summer.
Okay.
So I got like a 5-week summer like studying scholarship for their like a jazz program that they have.
Mm-hmm.
And that kind of cemented it. Like it kind of made me realize this is what I want to do all the time.
Right.
You know?
Right.
So yeah, so I got to New Orleans, and you know, New Orleans is New Orleans, I mean, right?
Yeah.
So
what year was this, after Katrina?
So the semester that I entered New Orleans was the semester that they opened up schools after Katrina.
Okay.
So because of that, like I got a great scholarship.
Trying to draw people down.
Trying to draw
there,
people
right?
down yeah. there. And I also had an amazing musical experience, because you know, it's a very sad thing that many musicians and families of musicians had to leave. But the flip side of that sad thing is that musicians coming in had an opportunity to play more, you know?
Yeah.
So, like, the week I got in, I got a steady gig on Thursdays playing with a salsa band, you know? Yeah, like, you know...
That's,
like
awesome.
Yeah, it's awesome. Like, this guy, Freddie Omar, he didn't even hear me out. He said, you play saxophone? You're from Puerto Rico? Are you free on Thursdays? All right, you're in the band. And I'm like, dude, you haven't even heard me. Like, what? You know? But that's how dire the situation was for musicians that could read and improvise and just
because everybody left. Because
everybody
there was,
left.
Like, no work for so long.
Yeah.
They had to do something, right?
Yeah, yeah. And New Orleans now, like, is a whole different scene than when I was there. Like, you know, because it's not 100% back, but it's still, like... you know, it's still a lot better than it was.
Sure.
People
sure.
are coming back. A lot more musicians. I went there 2 months ago, and I was like, wow, is this the same city?
Really?
Like, when I flew into New Orleans the first time, all the signposts were, like, sideways.
Oh, still? From the...
Yeah.
So you were right after the whole deal. Wow,
yeah.
Wow, man, oh, man.
Yeah, yeah.
So did you get your degree from down there?
Yep, yeah. Okay. I got my degree, and, like...
Jazz studies,
yeah. So, how did I tie that into Chicago? So my first year in New Orleans... a hurricane hit New Orleans, and I forget what the name of the hurricane was. I really don't remember it. It was a small one. But because of Katrina, the city was saying everybody needs to leave. And if you don't leave...
they couldn't take a chance, man. They're like, we
they couldn't
can't
take
have
a chance
this happen again.
Because
now.
The people of New Orleans love New Orleans. And when Katrina happened, they stayed. You
right.
know, they wanted to stay, you know? So anyway, so this next hurricane happened, and the city was like, you guys are leaving. Like, if we see, and they gave, like, a deadline, and I think the school gave a deadline, too. Everybody needs to leave. So, you know, like, my mom was like, dude.
Get out of here.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. So I didn't go back to Puerto Rico, so I was seeing a girl in Chicago. So it was August, and I came to Chicago, and...
it's perfect reason to visit your girlfriend,
yeah.
too, right? It's like,
yeah.
hey.
Well, actually, I didn't know much about Chicago back then. You know, I'm still, like, new to, like, I'm still new to the United States. I'm still new to the scene that, like, the jazz scene
yeah.
is a living, thriving organism, you
mm-hmm.
know? It's not just the Blue Note Records, you know?
Right, yep.
So I show up, and she says, surprise, actually, today's Jazz Fest, and we're taking the train, the Blue Line, directly to Millennium Park to hear Sonny Rollins play.
Oh, okay, so that's when you were up here, when Sonny was on it.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, and, like, my mind, that was my first day in Chicago, and I also went to Andy's, I went to the Jazz Showcase, I went to a bunch of clubs.
You probably saw Ira Sullivan then when you were at Jazz Showcase. Because he always runs those after-fest things and stuff.
I might have seen him, but I might have not known who he was at the time.
Okay.
You know?
Okay.
I just remember that every single person was killing.
Yeah.
I remember seeing Mike Frost in a tent.
That was my tent.
Yeah, a small little tent?
Yeah, that was the Chicago Jazz Magazine. We used to do, for up until two years into Millennium Park. How about that? 2 years into Millennium Park, it was the last year we did it. Uh-huh. But I used to do it over in Grant Park, too, where it was in my booth, and I had, a booth tent.
Yeah.
And then we had live music over there, and I would program it the whole afternoon and stuff. Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, he had an organ trio playing, and that was actually the first time I ever saw an organ trio.
Oh, really?
Yeah, in the tent.
The drummer was really awesome.
Was it you? Oh, my God. This is amazing. That's crazy.
I'm glad you didn't say the drummer sucked.
Yeah. The band, the great saxophone player, the time in the band was kind of weird. That's so awesome.
All right, so that's interesting. So you're going around and you're seeing all this great music in Chicago, and it probably opened your eyes because, I mean, you're in New Orleans, so you figure you're seeing great stuff in New Orleans.
Yep.
If you went to New York, you'd figure you'd see that, but you probably didn't know anything about Chicago.
I knew nothing about it.
How big the jazz scene is, was.
It was huge. And being in New Orleans for a while, the vibe in Chicago, the sound in Chicago is, it's like a spice. It's personal. It's what it is, you know?
Especially saxophone wise.
Oh, my gosh.
You know, you've got Von Freeman. I mean, that's that big tenor saxophone coming out of there.
Yeah, Von Freeman, it breaks my heart. I know it breaks my heart. It breaks everybody's heart in Chicago. But I came to Chicago, I think, the week that he... when I moved here.
Sure.
In 2012. I think it was around that time that he passed.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
So I never got to hear him. And I've heard all the stories. And Michael Amana showed me a ton of recordings, but yeah, never got to meet him.
Yeah, hearing it is believing it.
Yeah, exactly.
live in person, you know.
Yeah, so, I went back to New Orleans and Chicago stuck in my mind. You know, then a friend of mine, Gustavo Cortinas, who played the Jazz Festival last year, he moved here first, told me great things about Northwestern in Chicago. After graduating from Loyola, living as a full-time musician in New Orleans for 2 years,
Are you still dating the girl up here at that point?
No, we broke up right after. that was done.
Well, that's a good way to figure it out.
Yeah,
right?
You came up
with some good jazz and decided this isn't going to work.
Oh, yeah, exactly. You know, and it's fine. Like whatever, man. Chicago blew my mind. I don't even remember any of that, you know. So Chicago was still in my mind, and my friend came up here, gave me a great review, I guess, you know, and I said, mm-hmm. I'm going to apply to Northwestern, got into Northwestern, went to Northwestern, but really, I came to Chicago.
Right.
You know?
Right.
Yeah, the way...
It's a good excuse to come to school, because then you have a reason for being here, and you don't have to think about, oh, what am I going to do? You know what you're doing.
Yeah.
But then it also allows you to play the scene.
Of course,
In Northwestern, I mean, you know, you're 20 minutes from downtown, right? So you're all over it.
Yeah, and my one of my independent projects my first year at Northwestern was I did a... a thesis on the jam session scene in Chicago.
Oh, really?
So, yeah, so I went to three jam sessions every single week for a year and wrote about it, you know?
Oh, nice.
It was just an excuse to be out.
To go to a jam session.
Exactly.
And hang out and play and meet people and all that stuff.
Exactly. So, that's how I got here.
You know, that's the thing with Chicago, and I mean, you're younger than me, but I think you're seeing the same thing. When I was coming up, which was the mid-90s, when I came back from school from North Texas,
nice.
And it was seven nights a week, man, there was stuff happening. It was kind of the tail end of having lots of clubs, but there's still lots of jam sessions, lots of things happening. But I realized there's lots of places to play. And you know, the club scene that was here up until maybe the 80s or something isn't around, but the restaurants kind of took it over, and the different things like that. Because I know you've done stuff over at Gino's East and all that stuff.
Yeah.
But nowadays, I think it's even more prevalent. There's a lot of hip clubs coming back.
Oh, yeah.
That probably used to do more rock things and stuff, but I think now they're figuring out, hey, wait a minute, if we have some younger generation guys playing kind of a mixture of jazz, funk, rock, whatever, Latin.
Yep, for sure.
It's going to attract the same amount of people that we did anyways, and it's way more exciting. Is that kind of what you're thinking is happening with the scene these days?
I mean, for sure. I'm actually, I've been actually surprised in the last couple of months because places like Martyrs are having, they have a jazz night, and it gets packed.
Yeah.
This Martyrs is a beat kitchen. There's a ton of other places that that are like music venues. Reggie's Rock Club has had jazz.
Yeah, Robbie loves having jazz over there.
Yeah, yeah. Like there's a lot of places around town that has jazz. And restaurants that host jazz, you know?
Right. And they let you guys play. I mean, a lot of those places are like, they're not hiring you just to play in the background, because they're hiring you to come in and create some energy so that people want to hang, right?
Yep, yeah, like, I don't, whenever I play, like restaurant gigs, or what people call ear-pudding gigs, I mean, we're playing tunes, man. We're playing, you know, we're playing like Moment's Notice, you know, and like, and we're having fun. We're letting loose, you know, and people appreciate it. And I think that is awesome.
Yeah.
You know,
totally. So it's interesting. I mean, as it goes now, since you're coming up in the scene, obviously younger than me, you were influenced by a lot of different styles. Obviously,
for sure.
You know, the Blue Note records and all the classics.
Yeah,
stuff.
Yeah.
You probably learned all the standards and everything. And then obviously your whole background as far as the music goes. But I'm sure there's rock, there's funk, there's hip-hop, there's everything else.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
I mean, where do you think jazz is going these days? Because I think that everything is a natural progression. So, like, you're influenced by everything you're influenced by. And it's obvious that's going to be put into the music.
Of course. That's like the big question, and you know, I think jazz is like to put it as vaguely open as possible. Jazz is going everywhere, and jazz has been going everywhere. You know,
that's a great way to say it.
Jazz people, we've all known in the last like I would say 10 years. There's been various movements to define jazz.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I think that there's a reason for it. When something starts to lose its identity, those who identify with it try to fortify its identity so that it's not lost. For example, you know, the Puerto Rican culture in Chicago that does not live on the island but holds on to it so dearly.
Right,
you know,
right.
Same with jazz. Like, jazz is going in so many places. There are so many musicians doing so many cross-genre jazz projects, you know, and it's a difficult thing because not only you're trying to pay tribute to one tradition, you're trying to pay tribute to many traditions. You know, like in my case, it's the African American tradition of jazz as it grew up from the 1920s. You know, and the Puerto Rican percussive tradition that might have the same percussive roots over the course of like 200 years. You know, but it's not the same music,
right?
You know,
right?
Yeah, and
it's evolved.
It's evolved.
That's the natural progression.
And
of
like
everything.
You know, things like Instagram and Facebook and like YouTube and all these media platforms, like information is out there. You know,
yeah.
So people can mix. So jazz is going everywhere. You know, and like jazz is mixing into everything. And personally, I think that it's not. Well, it's not my job to do the defining. Somebody 30 years from now is going to look back and just do that.
Yeah, well, that's a good way to say it.
Yeah.
That's a good way to say it. I mean, you know, I think that in today's day and age, there's no way to classify anything. I mean, what are you going to classify? How can you do that? It's like, it's your music.
Exactly.
That's it.
Yeah,
you know
it is.
Because somebody could listen to Remembrances.
Yeah.
The new album by Roy McGrath, by the way. See, I get the plug in. and that's not jazz. What is that? That's more like Latin music.
Yeah, or
you know,
dancing music.
Yeah.
People could call it dancing music. Yeah.
So I think that you're right. I think that it just keeps evolving. And
I think the important thing is that people, like musicians and non-musicians, need to be sensitive towards understanding the roots of the music, and to paying tribute to it. You know, to remembering the past.
And then that helps you write your own compositions,
of course,
because you know the back end of it. Mm-hmm. You know the history of the music, so now you have a basis for writing and then taking the music to another level. Right?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
So this is a fascinating conversation. I'm glad you came down.
Yeah, yeah.
All right. So Remembrances.
Yeah.
It's available at roymcgrath.com.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
Tell us a little bit about, like, are there the tunes on there? I know we talked about how you developed the tunes, but is there a theme to the tunes? Is it, you know, are they stand out alone? I mean, talk a little bit about the structure of it, your band. You guys have been playing together for
a while.
Of
course. So, the band. So, in the band, we got Bill Cessna on piano, Kid Lyles on bass, Jonathan Wenzel on drums. That's like the main quartet. And then we have Ivelis Diaz on Barril de Bomba Buleador. And we have Victor Junito Gonzalez on congas. So I would say that each song stands alone, but also is connected to each other because, well, you know, most of them are in an Afro-Puerto Rican tradition. We have eight tunes, a bomba tune, we have a sika tune that turns into yuba. Those are styles of bomba music. We have a plena song. We have actually Afro-Cuban rumba song. A guaguanco. We also have like a tune in five and like a super solid swinger,
right?
You know, so there's a little bit of everything. But I was definitely focusing on like making it percussion heavy, you know. Yeah. And also just a little bit about the name Remembranzas. So Remembranzas, or as
you say
as,
it way better than I do.
Remembranzas, yeah. But you know, it just means remembrance, you know.
Okay.
And a remembrance is a memory that has a feeling to it, you know. And remembrances are usually those feelings or those moments in time that, whether good or bad, from that moment on, your perception of life has changed, you know? So, you know, Julia de Burgos, the poet that we base this off, you know, from the moment she existed onward, poetry and female rights in Latin America and Puerto Rican culture change, you know? And, like, my album is just, like, a reflection for me of, like, hopefully... From this moment on, I am a changed musician, you know? And also, like, I really hope that, like, every time we play, like, we are memorable to people as every single musician wants.
Yeah,
you know?
Right, right.
You know, so, like, yeah.
Well, it's really, it's a great recording. And, I mean, you know, I get a lot of stuff in through Chicago Jazz and everything. And this one
I can't
really
even imagine the tower of CDs you get.
This one stands out because of the different, I mean, each tune is just a different entity, I thought. And it had a different flavor. You don't get that a lot, even with some of the stuff that you get in that are, you know, Afro-Cuban or Latin or any of that. I mean, it all sort of runs together. This is very specific, and the writing's incredible.
Cool, thank you.
But it's the grooves too.
Yeah,
I mean, so I could tell you guys have been playing together for a while before you recorded this. Because,
oh, for sure.
I mean, it's like pocket, serious pocket playing on.
Well,
this,
actually,
right?
One of the most amazing things about this album is that so we released it in. Last year.
Yeah.
October of last year.
Okay.
But right before that, we were in Asia for a month, playing the music for a whole month. Then we got home, we took a 2-week break, we did one rehearsal, and we got straight into the studio.
Yeah, well, there you go.
So, like, all that magic was there. Like, that was just priceless to, like, play that music every single day for a month.
Yeah, that's amazing. Well, and before we close this thing out, we talked off camera for a second, talking about Asia.
Yeah.
You're going on like a world tour here in January. Talk about that for a minute.
Yeah, so in January we're going to, the quartet is going to China, Singapore, South Korea, and Myanmar. And like right now we're working on seeing if we can get over to Australia and to Hong Kong. We're going to be over in Asia for a month. We're going to be playing jazz clubs at night. And then teaching jazz at like high schools and elementary schools during the daytime.
Wow.
To like international schools and like Chinese schools.
Yeah.
Just to kind of like bring the Chicago vibe, just to bring improvisation into their music classrooms.
How do you set that up? I mean, is that teaching portion of it helping to supplement the playing portion of it?
For sure.
So it's like some. Organization or something that's bringing you over?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. So, like, we're going through an organization called Dulwich College.
Okay.
They're, like, a super big British college system. This is going to be our third time doing it. We do it, like, every year on and off.
Other year, whatever you guys have done it, yeah.
Yeah, so, like, and they usually want us to cram it into 2 weeks, you know? And I'm like, you know, no, let's open it up for a month, and then, like, in between, you know, the weekends, we'll play jazz clubs.
Yeah.
The teaching obviously is like a great way to sustain the jazz club stuff,
sure.
You know. Yeah, and like we did it last year, we were out for a month and we played a ton of music like all over Asia. It was awesome and super looking forward to it.
Well, what an incredible way to first of all connect.
Yeah.
From an educational standpoint.
Yeah.
But then also to get your name out into this huge audience. And then you're not only connecting with the kids that can't come to the jazz clubs at night, but then you're connecting with the parents that...
mean, yeah. Oh yeah, we actually have incredible. Yeah, every school we go to, we have a concert that we do in their concert halls, right? Yeah. And yeah, it's for students and parents and anybody who wants to come, you know. And of course, you know, like if you have a 10 to 15 year old, you're probably not going to go to jazz clubs on right. Tuesdays, Wednesdays, you know. So yeah, you know, and like you know, we've had a lot of great conversations with all these amazing people. Yeah.
That's amazing.
Yeah, well, it's pretty awesome.
All right, so everyone, you've got to check out Roy. Now you know his story. You know about how this entire... Say the name of the album because it sounds way better if you're doing it.
Remembranzas.
Remembranzas.
Yeah.
Remembranzas.
Yeah, Remembranzas.
I'm getting it. See? Yeah. Remembranzas. So the new recording, he's going to be performing this August 31st at the Jazz and Heritage Stage at the Chicago Jazz Festival. More information at chicagojazz.com, because I have everything up on that website. Mm-hmm. And, of course, roymcgrath.com. If you want to find out where else he is playing, because I know you pop up all over the town.
Yeah.
You always have one. You actually just played with James Sanders at the Deer Park Jazz Wine Fest that we put together.
Yeah.
That was awesome. And so all of that great stuff. Roy, thanks so much for stopping by.
Yeah, thank you.
I really appreciate it.
I appreciate it, too.
We got to close this out, because we have to eat some hot dogs here.
Yeah.
So, as I always close this out, though, hopefully everyone watching will get out and see some live music, and hopefully Roy will see you at his upcoming gig at the Chicago Jazz Fest, and hopefully I'll see you somewhere. But if I don't see you somewhere, hopefully I will see you somewhere soon out on the scene.